This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Basic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you once again from beautiful, majestic, and historic Saratoga Racecourse in Saratoga Springs, New York, and extending a very special welcome to everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206, and everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer, your smartphone, or your tablet, all there for you at horseracingradio.net. And it is truly impossible to talk about the history and the tradition and the lore and the legend of Saratoga without mentioning the name of tonight's guest at some point in that discussion. And it is an absolute delight to welcome the 75-year-old native of Dublin, Ireland to the program here. He is trainer Leo O'Brien, who has trained 548 career winners. His runners have earned more than $25 million in purses. And yeah, he was the second leading trainer at Saratoga in 1993 and 1994. So it's a special place for him as well. And Leo, again, a delight to have you on board. Thank you so much for taking the time.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, happy to have you with me. And boy, this place here, Saratoga, we're sitting here trackside and, of course, recording this show earlier in the day, so the training hours are just coming to an end. And it's a special, special place, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The best place in the world to be is Saratoga.
Yeah. I know I read a quote somewhere where you said that you thought Saratoga was the most romantic place in the world when you first came here.
That's right. I was single when I came first time. I was chasing the girls.
Great place to do it.
Absolutely.
I'm sure your daughter probably felt the same way.
Oh, yeah. She did. She did indeed.
Yeah, your daughter Leona, of course, is married to Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, met him here at Saratoga too, right?
She met him in Belmont.
Okay.
And but then he was riding, and he was riding for me quite a while, and he took a shine to Leona when she comes to races with me, and he always wanted to know who she was, and then Mike Smith came to me one day and said, Leo, I have somebody who really wants to meet your daughter and wants to go over with her. Well, I said, okay, who is it? He said, he's a jockey. But now he said, he's really nice. He's really, really nice. Well, I said, who is it? So, but Leo, I'm telling you now, he's absolutely terrific. And he wouldn't tell me who it was. So I said, look, if he wants to go over with Leona, he's going to have to ask her himself.
Sure.
So that's what he did. And they clicked, and that was it.
You have a background as a jockey as well, but how about your reaction when they said, hey, there's a jockey that wants to date your daughter? What was that like?
Oh, I didn't mind. I knew jockeys were good.
Yeah, and he is certainly one of the best, and you have to be thrilled with her choice, a class act.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to get on so well together.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about the first time you came to Saratoga. What do you remember about that?
I came in 1964 the first time, and actually I couldn't believe it. Just the people, and actual fact, the girls were absolutely gorgeous. Like, you know, I was mesmerized just in walking around the paddock and everything like that. And they'd ask you for your autographs, and, you know, you start thinking, wow, this is the place to be.
Yeah. How old were you?
I was 23.
23. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's remarkable. And then the success that you've been able to have here, could you ever imagine that you would be able to have that kind of success in a place like this?
I never dreamed of it. Never did. And to get Forster Dave, actually, he was by a sire that he given up on in Ireland. Vincent O'Brien trained him. And he was very, very wicked, I guess, and wouldn't run. and so they sent him back to America, and then the American people put him in the sale, and I happened to be there at the sale at the time. But Mr. Bamsey, he had just gone into racing, and we used to tell him what we thought, actually, basically, and how the horses would run and whatnot, like, you know, before he got into racing. And he bought this cheap filly and Broadway Joan for 2,000 or something like that. And then at the sale, his friend bought the sire. And he said, like, you know, we bought a horse together. I said, okay, what much? He said, 120,000. Oh, my God. The guy nearly fainted.
Yeah.
But as it turned out then, the filly didn't make it to the races, so they decided to breed her to that compliance. And every single foal they've had out of her was fantastic.
Yeah, isn't that incredible? Yep. And you never know where these horses are going to come from. And that one certainly was a surprise.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a lot about four-star Dave and his full brother, four-stars All-Star, who was spectacular. We'll talk about those horses. We'll talk about Yanks Music, who was one of my all-time favorite fillies. Absolutely loved her. We're going to talk about those as we move throughout the program, too. But I want to go back to the beginning with you, because this has always kind of been a family affair for the O'Briens. Mm-hmm. And I've read several people refer to you as the Obies, so to speak, with all of the different O'Briens that are involved. Take me back to the beginning with you. How did you get started, and where did this evolve from?
Oh, God, in Ireland?
Yeah.
Well, actually, in Ireland, I kind of did a little bit of work on farms, actually, after school hours. And I would milk cows and feed them and all that kind of stuff. And there was always, the farmers always had a workhorse, and they would hook it up to a cart, like, you know, bring in the turnips or the mangels or wherever, like, you know. And so I kind of liked the idea of horses. But then when I left school at 13 and I went to a farmer also, but also the man had horses.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big farmer, he had 300 acres, and he had a bunch of jump horses and flat horses. And I asked him, did he have any work on the farm? He said, well, I don't really have any work on the farm, but I said, I could use you at the horses. But I said, I don't know anything about horses. And I said, well, why don't you try it for 3 months? And if you don't like it, you tell me. And if I don't like you, I'll tell you. And I said, okay. So I got in working at the horses, and then, you know, you were just feeding them and mucking them out and all that kind of stuff for the first week or so. Then you start getting on them, and then it progressed, like, you know, you're trotting and galloping. And then up to the day, I knew exactly when the 2 months was up, like, you know. And I said, oh, he's going to fire me now. So it went by, and then a few more days went by. And then he called me into the office, and I said, oh, jeez, I'm done.
Yeah.
So he said, Leo, I want you to talk to your parents about being an apprentice jockey. Oh, I said, I couldn't be a jockey. He said, well, you know, just talk to your parents about it. I think you have potential. And so I said, okay. I went home, and I told my mother and father.
What'd they think?
Oh, they thought it was a great idea.
Really?
So I served 4 years on the flat, and then I served 4 years with him over jumps. So I was with him for 8 years, actually, as an apprentice.
Right.
And in the beginning, I rode on the flat, and then later on, I rode over jumps.
Wow.
And it was the funny thing, I was working for Mr. Taff at the time, when actually a buddy of mine, we used to pal around together in the stables, Dom O'Byrne, and he said, like, you know, there was an ad in the paper in the Irish field for looking for jockeys for America. So I got my sister, Birdie, to answer the ad. And I went out to dance, you know, never thinking anything of it.
Yeah.
And then they called me from the American ambassador from the embassy. I said, Leo, you got an appointment with Mr. Guest. I said, no. So I asked Mr. Taff what I'd do. And he said, Leo, well, you know what you got here. You have many horses you're riding a week and whatnot. And he said, just go in and see what happens.
Yeah.
So I went in, and Mr. Guest was such a good convince her in a half an hour I was going to America.
Tell me about being around Raymond Guest, because not only was he the American ambassador to Ireland, but his background was sensational. He's a very prolific individual.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he was a fantastic man. He really was. Kind. And actually, when I came over to America then, and I was actually on the farm in a place called Powhatan Plantation in Virginia.
Okay.
And he had his own private track, the whole kit and caboodle. And he had an airport in there as well. And we would be riding the horses around. There was only three horses on the track at a time, because there was only three of us working, like, you know, riding. And each time they came by him, the horse would be bucking and playing and jumping up in the air and everything. So we said, what the heck's going on? Like, you know, so we had somebody watch them, and each time the horses came by, he'd fire pebbles at them. So he wanted to see us get bucked off.
You're kidding me.
So,
wow.
That was a lot of fun working for him.
And you had no idea that he was going to do that, of course, right?
No.
So it caught you by surprise. Did you ever get bucked off?
I sure did.
But you got right back up on the
horse,
so to speak. Leo O'Brien, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton here this evening. And so, Leo, you come over, you're working with Raymond, and I can imagine that as a young man like that, it had to be just an amazing opportunity for you. And then to learn from somebody like that, to be around him, that has to go a long way into helping you all the way through your entire career, right?
Right, absolutely. It really was. Actually, I missed Ireland a lot, though.
You get homesick?
Yeah, I got pretty homesick the first year. And he seemed to know that I was homesick. So the reason actually you'd go back was when you get a fall and you get hurt. So I got a fall, actually. First 50 horses I rode over jumps never fell. And the 51st, 52nd, and 53rd, they all turned upside down.
Oh, jeez.
So I broke my shoulder the third time. And then he sent me home for 6 weeks. But all the money I had won for him and the races, he wouldn't pay me until I came back.
Really?
So he was pretty clever.
He was going to make sure that he got you back.
Yeah, exactly.
So he loved having you around.
Oh, yeah.
He thought the world of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
would he be the person that kind of got you started with your career? Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it was. No question. I'll tell you a story, too, about which probably got me in trouble a little bit in one way. I went to Powhatan Plantation from Ireland, and the horses were in Camden, South Carolina. So they said, well, you wait here, because I came over the end of February, and they're coming back in the beginning of March or middle of March. So I stayed there, and they came back, and they had bought a horse down in Camden from some trainer, and the chapter was riding it. It would run away every single day with this guy. Now, there was only three horses on the track.
Right.
And he'd go around, back up to the half-mile pole, turn around, and he'd go a quarter of a mile, and then he'd take off. And after a week or so, I said to the trainer, Peter Drinkwater, why don't you let me ride that horse? Why don't you let me gallop him one day? I said, I know what the guy's doing wrong. And he looked down at me and said, you little squint. You think he can hold that horse and Eamon can't hold that horse? I said, well, Peter, it's not strength. It's just know-how. So I said, okay, you're on it tomorrow. So I got on it anyway, and I knew exactly what he was doing. He was going, letting him go a quarter of a mile. Then he was getting tired, so he was changing his hands for a fresh hold. And as soon as he changed his hands, the horse took off.
Right, okay.
So I sit and suffer. Actually, I just stayed in one hold, just barely out of a canter, and he couldn't believe it. But he said, you're on him every day now. I said, oh, God, I screwed myself.
How was he to ride after that? Did you get along
well? Yeah, I got on very well with him. Yeah. He was very strong.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, once I got to know him, then he was fine.
I think what you just said is very interesting. It's not strength. It's
no.
know-how. And
exactly.
I think so many people, when they look at jockeys, and they are pound for pound some of the greatest athletes that we have in the world of sports.
Exactly.
And they're so strong.
Yeah,
but it's not strength that gets it done.
No, it really isn't. Actually, you got to have hands. And if you have good hands, and then you're talking to the horse through your hands, through the mouth.
Yeah.
That's how you make contact.
Is that what makes Johnny
yep.
so good?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you know Johnny before? I mean, you said that you didn't really know him before you met Leona, but how long did it take you to kind of get a sense of what he was all about?
As soon as he came by our house, actually, we got to know him quite well. He was a lovely man.
Yeah.
Lovely chap altogether. Yeah. Really and truly very straight. And Leona really liked him. And my wife, Joan, actually, she seen him together and said, "He said, Leo, we're in trouble. This is not going to go away." And sure enough.
Yeah. And next thing you know, and then you had the grandkids, and all the grandkids came here.
That's
with
right,
you
yeah.
today as you're
oh, yeah,
recording
yeah.
the program. And of course, your lovely wife, Joan.
Right.
It has to be just a blessing
Absolutely.
For you to have the entire family involved in the whole operation.
Yeah, no question.
Tell me about Joan. Where did you meet Joan?
I met Joan before I came to America. I met Joan New Year's Eve. I came in February, but the previous New Year's Eve, I met her at a dance. So I dated her for, like I'm going to say, 5 weeks. And then I came to America. And then I was writing to her every week or every day or wherever it was. But I missed all the girls so much. I wrote every girl. I was writing to tons of them. And so when I came back home after I got hurt, now, I wasn't going out with any girls in America because I was too busy.
Right.
It's like, no, this trainer would have us up at 4:30 in the morning, and you'd work all day. And we did everything. We washed the bandages. We washed the horses. We mucked them out. We put hay and straw in there. We brushed them. And even after the race, you'd go and help walk them after the race, when you rode a horse in a race. So it was pretty hard. Then when I got back to Ireland, I was delighted. I wanted to see everybody at the same time. So I'd go from one girl one day, another girl another day, another girl another day.
Right, sure.
So Joan said, that, you know.
They call that a player.
Yeah.
You know that, right? You're a bit of a player.
So Joan said, the best thing you can do is go back to America.
So,
got told
so you
out.
Did.
I did.
So you did. And, of course, the rest is history. Now, your brothers are also involved. And I know your brother
yeah.
Michael passed away a
That's
few
right.
years
yeah.
ago. But
yeah.
Both of your brothers were involved in the sport
yeah.
as well.
Tell yeah, I got the jobs from Michael with Jonathan Shepherd, and Colm was with Peter Drinkwater as well. He was actually riding and exercising hoist of flag. So he actually went more with the flat trainer, and I went with the jump trainer.
Yeah.
And Michael was very competitive. He was a champion. He was the first European rider to be champion jump rider.
Yeah.
In America.
Right.
And he was very good. He got paralyzed in a race in Camden. And I was right beside him when his horse dropped dead.
Did not know that, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I was on the horse of Mickey Walsh's, and he was on the horse of Jonathan Shepherd's. And we're going into the third fence. We're side by side. And actually, his horse had a heart attack and dropped dead. Never even took off.
Yeah.
So turned upside down.
Did you know right away that it was bad?
I knew it was bad, yeah. Yeah, I knew it was bad. I looked around, and actually the only time in my life that I started getting nauseous in a race, because I knew he was hurt bad.
Yeah.
And then again, I tried to pull up, but again, I didn't make it to pull up, so I jumped the next fence, and then I said, well, I seen everybody going over to him, so I said, well, I'll go on. And I wind up going on and winning the race.
Right.
So, but I told his wife actually that I thought he was hurt pretty bad. So.
Yeah, and that was what 1974, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then he spent the rest of his life in a wheelchair because he was
yeah.
paralyzed from
yeah.
that incident. But
yeah.
he went on to be
oh,
an
yeah.
unbelievable trainer.
Yeah. Well, the plan was for him and I actually, he would actually train in Ireland and I would ride him. But just before actually I went over, I got a horrendous fall in Monmouth. And then that ended my riding career because actually a horse landed on my back and then skid into my head and put all his weight in my head and broke my jaw dead center and cracked my skull both sides. So easiest fall I've ever had, never felt a thing. Like, I swear to God.
And it was the worst fall.
It was.
It was the worst result.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and I gone down, actually, I'm talking to the horse. I said, the horse just slipped. He jumped the fence fine. He just slipped on landing. And I said, you're not going to fall. And my feet was touching the ground. I was on the horse. My feet was touching the ground. And I said, well, it's an easy fall anyway. That last thing I remember.
Wow. Wow. I never understood. And, of course, we have another show on the network called Jock Talk where I visit with jockeys about their life. And one thing that always comes up is the injuries. And they talk about everything they had to overcome. But yet, they can't wait to get back on the horse, no matter how bad the injury is.
Absolutely.
And Johnny has told me that it's a drug. It's an addiction. That you just that addiction, that feeling of winning a horse race. You can't get enough of it.
That's right. You can't, exactly.
Is it the same for a trainer?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, we love to win. And it's kind of sad up here. I haven't won yet, but I need to win.
We've done your fair share of winning here at Saratoga, including four-star Dave, who was a remarkable 8 consecutive years that he won the race here. And I grew up, you know, an hour from here in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and I can remember he was one of the first horses that I really started to fall in love with as I was getting involved with racing.
Right.
And so I blame you in so many ways, by the way. I remember he had a get well card. When
that's
he was
right, yeah.
sick, and they had everybody signing the get.
That's
I have
right.
a picture of me signing that get well card out
oh
back.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
terrific.
Yeah, that's how much. And he was so popular.
Yeah,
he
just buried across the way there.
Yeah, Clare Court.
Yeah,
right. One of only 3 horses.
That's
right.
Yeah,
there, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that what an honor.
Yeah, my grandson, my wife took my grandson to see him, see his grave when he was younger, and he said, "Grandma, I got a great idea. Why don't we dig him up?" Innocent kids.
Yeah. Is it just head, heart, and hooves? Or is it his entire body?
Not the whole body.
The whole body.
Yeah, whole
yeah.
body.
Yeah. Of course, known as the Sultan of Saratoga. And that winning streak started in 1987,
that's
went
right.
to 1994. He had 3 opportunities in 1995 to extend that streak. And I think I watched every single one of those races and just cheered for him to do it one more time.
Right.
And this grandstand and clubhouse here at Saratoga was electric in
absolutely.
Those 3 races.
It really was, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. How disappointing was it for you when he didn't get it done?
Well, no, he got it done every year he raced.
Yeah, even the last year, 95.
Yeah, he won that also.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and every year he raced there, he won.
Tremendous.
Everyone, because he raced first at 2, and last year he raced was even 9-year-old, and he won also.
Yeah.
And then in the, he had won the earlier race, but then the Barnabarook, actually, they wanted us to run in it. Because it was either grade 2 or grade 1 at the time. And Lure was running in it. And our horse of Billy Mott, actually, that was the horse of the year 2 years previous. Sky Classic.
Mm-hmm.
And we were 3 lengths in front coming into stretch. And at that time, they used to let every kind of shoe you could use on the grass. Like, you know, so the grass got very cut up. And then it got real hard. And he stepped on him, I guess, a hole halfway up the stretch. And he broke a bone in his leg, but he still finished 3rd.
And, even with the broken bone?
Yeah.
What's your favorite 4-star Dave story or memory?
Oh, God, there's so many of them. He actually, he got really to know my voice really well. Like, you know, so when I would come into the barn and I'd just shout Dave, he'd come running to the door and whinnying. So he almost answered me. And I used to go back at night to check him actually at 8 o'clock at night, 8:30 every night. And I just drive the car in. And he actually, I think he got to know the sound of the car. So as soon as I got out, he'd be whinnying. And I swear to God, he just was unique actually.
Yeah.
He can almost talk to you.
And I know when he was retired, he actually got a key to the city
as
well, right? Which came in the form of a cake.
That's
right.
That right? Yep.
Tell me about that. That's pretty cool.
Oh, that was great. Yeah. And then he actually, one of the hardest places to take him was they wanted him in the 21 Club in Manhattan. And we had to van him in the middle of the city.
Oh, you're kidding.
And get him out of the van and then walk down the steps into the 21 Club. And they took him right down the steps into the 21 Club, and then everybody got a picture taken with him and whatnot, and then we got him back up. That was kind of, really hard to do because I thought he'd kill himself or something like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a thoroughbred here, like, you know, you're taking a 1,000-pound animal down steps and then into a restaurant.
Right.
I sweated bullets that day.
But he handled it like a pro.
Yeah, really did.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow. And I can only imagine he started, what, 100 times? Is that right? In his career? And he raced until the age of 9.
Right.
And for you to keep him going and competing at that top level, what was the key?
Well, the key actually was we raced him hard in the summertime because he loved the hot weather. And every winter we sent him down to Ocala, Florida, and turned him out for a couple of months in Dr. Leslie Hagen's farm. And she was a human doctor and her husband was a heart doctor. So they used to treat the horses like patients. They looked after them like you, unbelievable.
Sure.
And each year he'd come back, then he'd go to Tony Everard's in Ocala, and he'd train him for a couple of months, then send him back to me. And it worked like a charm.
Wow.
Grass horses, they need a little bit of time off, I think. You can't raise 12 months a year.
Right.
Every year after year after year. If you can give him a time off, he'll have a much, much healthier and much happier horse.
Put his record, his feat, into perspective for me. For a horse to make a start every year here for 8 consecutive years is remarkable in itself. Mm. But to win here for 8 consecutive years is that'll never be matched again, will it?
Well, you never know.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so, though, right?
You wouldn't think so because they don't seem to keep the horses around running that long.
Yeah.
Anymore, like now, but the good ones anyway. But I mean, you can get a lot of cheap claimers and they'll run until they're 8 or 9 or 10.
Yeah. When he finally did succumb to his heart attack, that was a very difficult day on you, I know.
Oh, yeah.
And you took it very hard, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I couldn't go out and see him even. I couldn't even go and see the horse.
Really?
I just want to remember him as he was.
Yeah.
I didn't ever want to see him lying on the ground dead.
Yeah. And your son Keith was aboard
that day,
wasn't
right.
he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Everybody took it very, very hard, but actually I had asked Mr. Bomsey not to bring him from Florida to Belmont to lead the parade because he was 17, and I said he's such a hyper horse and he's such a competitor. He thinks you're bringing him here for a race, and I think that's what happened, actually.
Even at the age of 17?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he was so competitive.
Yeah.
As soon as he seen the grandstand, he said, oh, I'm going to run again.
Did he perk up when he got to Saratoga?
Was
there something different about him when he arrived here?
Yeah, the weather, I think. He loved the heat. There was one year, actually, it was only a 4-week meet, and my son Keith was riding him. He was exercising for me as he was going to college. And it was 90 degrees plus every single day for that meet, and he was never better. He just loved the heat.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stand the heat, of course.
I'm glad he enjoyed it because he enjoyed being here at Saratoga. Boy, what a remarkable horse. And he's always missed and he's remembered here
at
Saratoga.
Yeah.
And now they have a bar.
That's fantastic.
The four-star day sports bar here at Saratoga.
Yeah, that's terrific. It looks great now.
Yeah. Visiting with trainer Leo O'Brien on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Going to get it to a short commercial break, and of course we'll come back and continue this visit in the second half of the program. Stay with us. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Fasig Tipton November sale annually posts the highest average and median of any mixed sale in the world. Over the past 10 years, 142 fillies and mares have brought prices over $1 million, and 3 world records have been broken. Last year, the Fasig Tipton November sale sold 23 seven-figure fillies and mares, more than any other mixed sale in the world, with an average sale price far greater than our nearest competitor. The world's premier breeding stock event, November 1st, 2015 at Fasig Tipton. Where will you be?
And they're off to New York, the premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the Spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, Get with the program. The best program.
And time now to showcase the Cal Density Horse of the Week, which you can find at the upcoming Keeneland September Yearling Sale. This week's horse is hip number 1023. Write it down, 1023, a wonderful daughter of leading sire Tappet out of Point Chanel by Point Given, who is a half-sister to stakes-placed Runaway Brute, winner of more than $237,000. And her second dam is a graded stakes-placed half-sister to grade one winner Got Coco. Consigned by Gainsway for Winchell Thoroughbred's Corinthia Farm, where he was allowed to run free, not stalled, a natural athlete to behold, and fed Cal Density Black Label daily. Veterinarian Dr. Perry Warnell at Harrison Vet Clinic in Cynthiana, Kentucky, is quoted as saying, "I have watched these horses grow up and seen the impressive growth into big, stout horses with strong bones. See for yourself the special qualities Cal Density fed horses offer, like clean radiographs, conformity, bone density, hoofs, and attitude. Visit us at barn number 30 and get the buyer's edge for this special horse. Write it down, hip number 1023, and last week's hip number 346 at the Keeneland September Yearling Sale."
The Breeders' Cup runs here.
What a memorable Breeders' Cup Classic. It's a race for the ages. Bayern, Toast of New York, California Chrome. Bayern, Toast of New York. Bayern has won it.
The Breeders' Cup, October 30th and 31st. Exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Cal Density. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information and to listen live. This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasig Tipton.
And welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, continuing our visit with trainer Leo O'Brien. And if you missed any portion of this program, well, you know what you can do. You just go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast of this program and all of our Trainer Talk shows. They're all there for you at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Don't forget, you can subscribe to those podcasts and have them sent right to your phone, right to your mobile device or your tablet, whatever it might be, by going to our website. And really enjoy having you with us here tonight. Sirius 220, XM 206, streaming worldwide on our website as well. And Leo, we left off kind of touching on your son Keith, who of course was also a really accomplished steeplechase jockey.
Yep.
And he was aboard Four Star Dave the day that he died. But the day that Keith was born, you weren't even there that day, right? You couldn't be there.
No, that's right. I was here in Saratoga.
Yeah.
And I was riding actually in a big race, and the Turf Riders actually was over the big fences, and so I had to get time off. I won that race, and then I was riding the next day, and I had to call I got a message from downstate, actually, where we were staying. We were staying in a little what would you call it, a little house in the woods.
Right, sure.
And no telephone or anything like that.
Yeah.
So the gentleman actually that was in closest to us, where we used to do the shopping, and they called him, and he came up to us at 3 o'clock in the morning and said, "Leo, your wife is having a baby." So I said, "Geez, okay." So I had to wait until the stewards came in that morning so I could get to release me off so I could go back. And
wow.
So they said, "Okay, you know, nothing you can do, so you can go home." So I went home, and she didn't have the baby until we got there anyway.
Right.
Which was quite a while afterwards.
Yeah. Wow, tremendous, tremendous. And did you always hope that he would be kind of following your footsteps and be a steeplechase jockey, or a jockey for that matter?
Not really, because I knew kind of steeplechasing was a little dangerous. Like, you know, the chances are you're going to get hurt anyway.
Yeah.
So I was hoping maybe he'd be a professor somewhere.
Go get his education, which he did, by the
way.
Right?
Yeah, he did indeed. But what he's doing now actually is, where he's dabbling in the horses as well, as, but he's also dabbling in a little television work and films.
Yeah.
He actually did a film in Virginia just a couple of weeks ago, and he was Jesse James Minder.
No kidding.
But the only thing he was upset of, he was the only one in the film that didn't have a gun.
That's not fair.
Right.
That's not fair. Well, I know he's also extremely talented with voiceover work,
yeah,
too.
That's right.
And he does some work with us here for the network.
Oh, does he? Okay,
he did some work
great.
With us throughout the Triple Crown.
Good.
And he is so talented with the different ways that he can voice different storylines, whatever
right,
it might
yeah,
be. And,
yeah,
and
yeah.
If you go to his website, he has all the different samples on there. Uh-huh. And I just enjoy going back and listening to some of his work. It's really remarkable.
He can
did
speak,
you teach him that?
No, he can speak much better than I can.
Leo O'Brien here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I want to read a quote from Keith that I found here as I was getting ready for the program. He said, "I've always watched Pop, and I learned the most important thing is to be flexible with your horses and never get into a rigid pattern of training." Then he went on to say, "My dad likes to listen to his instincts. It's important to have a routine, but each horse is different."
That's correct. Yep.
You agree. What's that mean?
Well, you know, like every person is different. You know, you have three or four children. They're all different. So horses are the same way. So you have to find out what is good for them, for each one, and then you go for it.
So you'll have your own style of training, for example, but you can customize the program
to
fit each individual horse.
Exactly.
Is that the right way to say it?
Yep. And actually now up in Saratoga, you have a chance here. You can throw, there's a hill at the back of, as you're going out. And when you get rain, it's a very good idea if you take the horse down there and jog and gallop up the hill, because it's completely different. Like, you're not going around and around, you're just going up and down the hill.
Yeah.
And the horses seem to like that. And that's a lot, they do that a lot in Europe, actually.
Right.
They always train uphill, and it's up and down, and of course, it's not made tracks, like, you know, it's all natural terrain.
Yep.
So
those long turf gallops.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's good for the horses,
too,
right?
Oh, it's very good. Yeah,
yeah. We hear that a lot with, you know, horses getting away from the commotion of the racetrack, and they can be out and just be a horse. How important is that?
It's very important, because I think actually just doing the same thing every day, that's how horses get actually ulcers and, like, you know, and get their insides are all churned up.
Right.
Like, you know, because it's the same old repetition day after day. The same place. The same track.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to give them a break from that.
Yeah, gotta. Yeah, you gotta.
You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take me back to 1991. That was a year that was really special for you. Things were really clicking, and you were the New York bred trainer of the year. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier you were second leading trainer at Saratoga in 93 and 94. So 91 was where things really kind of came together and started to get rolling, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, tell me about that year.
That was a hell of a year. I think we had four stars all star that year. And he was a really nice two-year-old, but actually came from Florida, and the trainer said, you know, this is a nice horse, Leo. So I ran him in the 5 furlong race, and he didn't do much, and then I ran him 6 furlongs, both on the dirt, and didn't do much either. I said, he finished third, so I said, you told me this horse was a good horse. And he said, well, yeah, Leo, he is. So I said, okay. So we came to Saratoga, a four-star all-star, and I ran him in grass race, and it came off the grass, and it ran in the slop, and he won by 9. So I knew then he was a good horse.
Right.
I knew then he was a grass horse also. So he went on then, and he won stakes at 2, and we ran actually in the big two-year-old race in Laurel. They had an international festival actually in the fall. And there was really good horses from Europe and France and everywhere came over. And I ran in the mile and 16th race, and I finished second to a champion French horse. So I knew he was good then.
Yeah.
And I said to Richie, I have a plan now. I said, how would you like to go to Ireland for the 2,000 guineas? And I said, Leo, what the hell is 2,000 guineas? Well, I said, that's their money, but it's the first classic. Like where their Derby is their first classic in America, the Guineas is the first classic in Europe. So he said, okay. And said it would be a really top-notch race, a grade one race. And I think he's the right horse to do with it. So we planned on that. And he actually he made arrangements that he would go on vacation and he'd visit three or four countries, and the last country would be Ireland on the way home. So we sent him down to Ocala, turned him out for a while, then we went down when he started back training. I went down every week for 3-4 weeks actually as he was getting closer, and we'd train him the wrong way on the Hart farm and different farms actually that was up and down, there was natural terrain.
Okay.
And we went the wrong direction. And I had Forster Dave, Forster All-Star, Irish Linnet, and we had another, Tiffany Taylor. And we would have the four of them, and Forster's All-Star behind, and then I wanted him to finish at the end, that kind of thing, and he'd go through them.
Yeah.
And I knew if he could stay with Forster Dave, he was pretty darn good.
Sure.
So that's what we did, and then I came back. We ran him in a race, and on the way up, we ran him in a race in Keeneland, and he won that, the three-year-old stake. And then I ran him in a race in Belmont. And actually, Pat Kelly had some great horses for that lady in Ocala, Live Oak Plantation. Mm-hmm. Had a top-notch horse, and we were only three, but I ran him in it anyway, and he finished second. And I said, oh, God, I'm not sure. Maybe we shouldn't go to Ireland. And Richie said, what? He said, I got it all planned. I'm going to be there. You got to go. I said, well, okay. All right, we'll go.
That's where I'm ending my vacation.
All right, right, exactly.
And, of course, that worked out pretty well.
Oh,
he
became
the first American-based horse to win a European Classic.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was fantastic. Actually, my brother had his stable was actually only like 15 minutes, 20 minutes away from Decorah. And we stayed with him, and he said to me, now, you're coming over here, you're not going to embarrass me, are you? And I said, jeez.
Like confidence, yeah. Right?
Right. That's all I wanted to hear, that, my God. So when he seen the horse, he knew it all. He said, no, he said, this horse's okay. So we took him and gave him a little gallop on the Corum. Then Mike Smith came over, and we had Mike walk the track twice. And because it's quite uphill, the last part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not dead straight, but it's almost straight. So he jumped off in front. And I watched the race with Michael on the stand for the paraplegians. And so he was giving me a reading how he's doing. And he said, he's in front. I said, oh, wow, okay. Well, he's a front runner anyway. He can be a front runner. So he was in front, and then he got to the 3 furlongs out, and then a horse where the round track meets the straight track, there's an opening, and it was a horse of Jim Bulger's got up on the inside and got a little bit of ahead of him, like a half a length or so.
Okay.
And he said he's second, and now he's coming up the last hill. He said, oh geez, he's in front, and he almost jumped out of the chair. So he was more excited than anybody.
Yeah,
so I was really delighted that we went.
Yeah, and I can imagine that had to be just a big party for you and for the brothers and for everybody because of the fact that he was able to pull off that feat.
Right.
You mentioned Richard Migliori, who was a longtime rider for you. You had a great relationship with him. Tell me about that relationship.
Well, Richie was very, very good, actually. Like, sometimes it was hard to get him, like, you know. But he got on very, very well with Forster All-Star and Forster Dave. But there was many really great riders that rode him, like, you know, many. Like Mike Smith was on Forster's All-Star, because Mike was a much quieter rider.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and he could listen to you and you could tell him what you thought. And so that's why we selected Mike for actually... I think he was second on him here when we actually beat or second to the French horse. Mike was on him.
Yep.
But it was great to have those kind of horses, like, you know. And then when we got the filly, Johnny wasn't around when Forster Dave was here, I don't think, actually. But I think he might have ridden Forster's All-Star one time. And I gave him the wrong instructions, of course.
No, that never happens. What'd you tell him?
Tell him take his time, wait and wait. He wants to be in front.
You must have been kicking yourself afterwards.
But it was fine, though, like, you know. But he rode then. He rode when we got to Philly, Yanks Music, I got Johnny to ride her first, and he stayed on her all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, how special was she?
Oh, she was fantastic. That was probably the best horse I've ever had, actually.
Yeah.
Was her.
Yeah.
We got her first, actually. Strange way we got her, actually. The man that owned her, Mike Fennessy, he actually had her in the 2 years, a yearling sale in Kentucky. And I happened to be down there that day with Tony Everhard, and we got chatting, and because we're all Irish, man. And he said, look, I have a filly in here. If I don't sell her, I'll send her to Tony, and then we'll break her, and then I'll send her to Leo. But you have to take that with a pinch of salt, because that's a long ways out. So he wanted 15,000 for her. He was bid 8, so he bought her back. So sent her to Tony. Tony got her ready and put her in a 2,000 training cell. And he told Mike, he said, she's worked between 30,000 and 40,000. So he was bid 18. So Tony went to him and said, look, I have somebody who'll give you 23,000 for the horse. And he said, well, wait a second, you told me she'd work between 30,000 and 40,000. Is that right? He said, yeah, that's right. I said, why would I send her for 23? So he sent her to me.
Yeah.
And there was a 2,000 training sale here in Saratoga at the time. And he said, Leo, I have her in the sale, but you work on, if you think we should keep her, we'll keep her. So I worked her a few times, and I said, holy cow. So I told him, take her out of sale. And he did. And she got sick. Unfortunately, she got sick. She got a cold and pneumonia. So it took us a while to get her back together. And then I was actually training her, and she was training really, really good. So I come back to the barn one night about 8 o'clock, 8:30, and there was this lady in looking at her. I said, why would you be looking at that horse? She said, well, Mike Fennessy called me and he offered me half the horse for 50,000. I said, well, why wouldn't you buy the whole thing for 100?
Right.
This is a really good filly. No, I said, I only want half. So I called Mike and I said, Mike, you're not selling this filly for 50,000. So I said, Leo, it suits me. So what he was thinking, Tony said she's worth between 30 and 40. He figures he gets 50 for half.
Right, sure.
So he's a winner.
Yeah, right? Yeah, he's already won. Yeah.
So now she went on then to win her first start, her second start, and then we gave her a little break, actually, and didn't run her until the spring of her three-year-old year, and she won her third start. And then she went, after winning the three races, she went in the mile race, the first three-year-old filly race in grade one in Belmont.
Yep.
And she finished second on that, just beating the neck. But through no fault of her own, she actually got destroyed in the race, actually. She got stopped. And there was one particular jockey was outside Johnny. Johnny, she used to break slow. So she broke last of 13. And she was on the rail. So, like, you know, you're coming from the mile pole down the backside in Belmont. And every time Johnny went to go forward, this guy went forward. And when Johnny went to take back, he took back. So he never got out until they were turning into the straight. And he had to take back to 13. Took out and was flying to the finish, was beating the neck. Finished second, beating the neck.
Wow.
So I said, wow, this is a good filly. Now the owner wanted to change rider after that. He wanted Jerry Bailey to ride. I said, absolutely not. But Johnny did nothing wrong. He just got fouled by somebody trying to stop him.
Right.
And so I said, okay. So then he went on to win. She won 4 grade ones that year. And then I took her to Canada.
She won the Eclipse Awards.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. Yeah, yeah, she did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was 2 seconds and 7 wins.
Wow.
She only ran 9 times.
Yeah, I fell in love with her. She was so spectacular in the way that she did everything. And you could tell that she was so talented.
Yeah.
And I know that you know that. But when that name was called, Yanks Music, for the Eclipse Award, what was that moment like for you?
Oh, it's fantastic. I couldn't believe that she, well, I could believe, really, because she was the best, actually, because she had beat the filly, the champion filly from the previous year, Wayne Lucas's horse.
Yeah, Serena Song.
Serena Song, yeah. She'd beat her twice. So I knew it was kind of a, we nearly actually had to get it, like, you know.
Yeah.
But another part of the story, though, doesn't end there. It's actually, the Arabs came to me, actually, and towards the end of her career, just before she ran in the Breeders' Cup, or before Breeders' Cup, and he said, we want to buy your filly. I said, okay, make me an offer. He said, well, we'll give you 500,000. I said, I wouldn't insult a man by asking that. So I said, 1 million. I said, no. Then 1.5 million, no. 2 million, no. 2.5 million, I wouldn't take it. And I said, look, I'll give you 3 million, any country, any currency. So I said, look, I'll ask him, and I'm sure he may agree to that.
Right.
So I called him and said, look, you have an offer of 3 million for your filly. He said, oh, wow, great, okay. So I said, you better call your partner, who owns the other half. The partner that owned the other half that he sold for 50 wouldn't sell.
Oh, no.
So for 50,000, he lost 3 million.
Right. Wow. That's one of the stories that makes you want to cry,
right,
when you hear those kind of stories.
Exactly.
And I know you thought so much of her that she was actually entered, if I'm not mistaken, in the Breeders' Cup Classic
she was,
against Cigar.
Yeah, she was going to run in there, too, actually, and blew her out the day before, and she went a little bit fast. So I wasn't there, and so I got up the next day, and when I took the bandages off her that morning at a Breeders' Cup, there was her ankle was very hot. So I said, look, no, this filly's out of twisting her ankle. So she probably did it in the breeze. And so I got a vet. I said, look, this is a really good filly. I don't want anything to happen to her, so have a look at her. And he said, I'd scratch her. I said, okay, go ahead, scratch her. And Johnny was riding her that day too, like, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then the state steward came down about an hour later and to look at her. I said, this filly is okay. I said, bullshit. My son-in-law is riding this horse. Come on.
Right. Yeah.
What happens? She breaks her leg and somebody gets really badly hurt.
Right.
So I said, no, I'm not going to take a chance. And he said, I would not have scratched this filly out and run her. And the owner came down, Mike Fennessy, and he said the same. He wanted me to run anyway.
Ooh.
I said, no.
Right.
So then he decided he'd put her on foal and sell her anyway. So they wind up putting her on foal to Stormcat and selling her for $1 million. And Stronic, I think, bought her for $1 million.
Yeah.
But he could have had 3 million.
Yeah, that's one of those stories that just, it makes you want to just run and hide.
Right.
When you hear those kind of stories, for sure. Visiting with trainer Leo O'Brien here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. If you can't tell, Leo has had so many unbelievable moments in this sport. He has been blessed to be around some great horses and some great people, including his son-in-law, John Velasquez, the Hall of Fame rider, and Johnny was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2012, and we broadcast that induction ceremony on the radio. It was the first time we'd ever done something like that. And I can remember sitting there watching him get very emotional as he was making his speech.
Yeah,
and he couldn't get through it without your daughter,
that's right,
Leona,
yeah,
who brought up on stage.
Yeah,
what
yeah,
was that
yeah,
like?
She actually, she could see that Johnny was struggling, and she immediately went up to the stage and stayed beside him and helped him through whatever a little emotion he had, because he was very emotional.
Yeah.
Very emotional.
Yeah, he couldn't get through it. And for you, sitting there watching, what was that like for you?
I was very emotional too. My God, thank God I didn't have to speak.
Yeah, pretty spectacular. And it's been a great ride for Leo O'Brien, and the ride is still ongoing. Of course, it's a family affair, as you've heard throughout the program here tonight. Leo, what do you consider, I'm going to put you on the spot here for a minute, what do you consider to be your greatest training feat?
Oh, God. I would say winning the 2,000 guineas. I would think.
Yeah.
Because Vincent O'Brien came up to me at the Curragh, and he said, Leo, you are doing a great thing for racing. And he shook my hand. This is before the race now. So I didn't even know I won. So I always remember that. That was fantastic, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it was truly a great moment. And, of course, the first American-based horse ever to win that European Classic. Mm. When you think back on your career, what are you most proud of?
As lucky as I was really lucky, I felt. And very lucky to meet the people I met and have the owners I had. And none of the owners I had were huge money men, anything like that. It was all done through a small amount of money, and okay, a lot of people bred a little bit then themselves, and they got good horses, which is great.
Yeah.
Never had to go out and pay $1 million horse, say. I'd like to, but...
Yeah, that would be nice, too.
That would be nice, too.
We talked about some of the big-name stars that you've been around, but tell me about a horse that maybe people aren't as familiar with that really captured you and that you're never going to forget.
This would be in Ireland, actually, though. And a horse called Icelock. Was one of the first horses I started to look after. And this horse actually was almost human, almost like Forza Dave. And he was a chaser. And he'd run actually, he'd run every year, but they give him the summer off, kind of thing, because they run around the jump races. If you go on the soft ground, you have to wait for the winter. And he'd win two or three races every winter. And when I was serving my time then, and he got hurt one time anyway, so the boss's son actually said to me, Leo, there's one more horse to go, you better get on it. And we want you to ride down to the end of the gallops, like, you know, which was kind of miles away. And I said, okay. So I went down, and I was a bunch of fields away, and next thing I heard this crack, like, you know, like a gunshot.
Yeah.
And I said, holy shit, what's that? So I came back, and the horse was lying in the courtyard dead. They put him down.
Oh, no.
Because the owner wouldn't, he wouldn't retire him. Like, you know, he just wanted to get rid of him. So that's upset
horrible.
Me. That upset me a lot.
Yeah. That must have taken you a while to get past.
Oh, Jesus. Forever. I was crying, and why would they do that? There's nothing wrong with the horse. I didn't think, you know. It wasn't lame or anything like that, but you just had an injury that you probably wouldn't run again.
Right.
Like maybe a bow tendon or something.
Right. Oh, that's horrible.
That upset me.
That's the one thing that strikes me as we visited here tonight and hearing your story is it really comes through to me, the passion you have for the horse, right? And that's always been front and center for you, hasn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely, yep. Your horses are like your children. You really get fond of them. Like, you know, you get to know them, they know you, like, you know, and you have great respect for the horse, actually.
Now you have all the grandchildren that you get to spend time with when you're not at the racetrack.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Tell me a little bit about that. That must be enjoyable.
Oh, yeah, they're great. Like, Lorena and Michael comes to the track with me every morning. Actually, Lorena just got her license 3 days ago, and she drives me to work and drives me home.
When did that happen, by the way? How fast? Of course, Lorena, Michael, sons of your daughter and Johnny, right? Yeah, or sons and daughters. Yeah, I mean, and they have three kids, right?
Two.
Okay, they have the two.
My
All
son
right.
has five.
Five. So you have, what, seven grandchildren?
Yeah.
So is that keeping you busy, I would imagine?
Oh, yeah. They're great kids altogether.
Yeah.
And they love sports, which is good. Like, you know, they're all into sports, which is football and running and soccer and everything.
How about horse racing? Do they like
being Oh, yeah, they horses? Do, yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of them actually could be jockeys even. A couple of them, Keiths, actually, they're small. And they're very quick. Like
You said you want to keep to get his education. What about them? Do you want them to be jockeys?
Not really. No. It's difficult. but I'm sure Keith wouldn't mind, actually. But because it keeps you in it, it keeps you interested. Like, you know, if you have a child, great. But it is a tough game, though. Tough game.
How about if they want to be a trainer? What do you tell them if they want to be a trainer?
I'd go for that. That'd be fine. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be good.
A lot of hours.
A lot of hours, but it's very rewarding, I find.
Yeah.
Even to go there every day. And now, you don't get a lot of vacations or anything like that.
Right.
Actually, the only time we got a vacation while we were riding was when we got hurt.
Right.
So sometimes you were looking forward to getting hurt. Not too bad, though. You know, a shoulder or, an arm or anything like that.
Yeah.
And you were out for a few weeks. And that was actually grand. But after a week or two, then you start getting itchy feet. Want to get back.
Well, Leo, I have to tell you, to hear your story and so many of the great moments that you've had in your career has just been extremely enjoyable tonight. I know our listeners have probably enjoyed this. And I really want to thank you for taking the time. And all of our guests who appear on the program receive a gift courtesy of one of our sponsors. That is Flair Equine Nasal Strips. So we'll get those out to you.
And oh, great.
Again, can't thank you enough for taking the time here tonight. It's been such a delight, and all the best moving forward.
Thank you very much.
All right, Trainer Leo O'Brien.
Thank you.
On Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Don't forget, you can catch us each and every Wednesday evening at this time on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206. Of course, you can stream us online at horseracingradio.net and check out podcasts of all of our programming at horseracingradio.net as well. For my producer, Lee Delapina, back in our Lexington studios, and for trainer Leo O'Brien, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.